If there's one place in Greece that has even deeper historical roots than Athens, it's Crete.
For the Greeks of a later time, Crete was the most venerable and ancient place imaginable. It was where everything began.
Barry Unsworth, reading from his book called Crete.
The first herders of sheep were Cretan, the first beekeepers and honey makers, the first archers and hunters. These last were the mythical Curetes, sons of Earth, who attended on the infant Zeus, the father god of the Greeks. The legend has it that he was born in a cave near the present village of Psikro, high in the Dicte Mountains on the southern edge of the Lasithi Plateau in eastern Crete. His mother, Rhea, came here to give birth to him in secret, so as to save him from her husband, Kronos, ruler of heaven, who, having been told that a son of his would supplant him, routinely devoured all his offspring. Rhea presented him with a stone instead, and in his cannibal haste he swallowed it without looking too closely. She then repaired to Crete and had the baby, leaving it in the care of the Curetes, who, in addition to their other achievements, were the inventors of the armed dance, clashing their bronze weapons against their shields to drown out the baby's cries, and so prevent Kronos from discovering the trick that had been played on him, and eating this one too.
Barry Unsworth is one of England's most admired writers. He's famous for his historical novels, some set in ancient Greece. So it's not surprising he has a special fondness for the Greek island of Crete. Unsworth told Steve Paulson that Crete is so old, you can feel the layers of history wherever you go.
The most immediate way that you see it is probably in street names. I mean, in a city like Chania, you see the ancient Greek mythology replicated in the names of the streets. There's a Minos street. Minos, the legendary ruler of the Minoans, the king who built the labyrinth to imprison Daedalus and Icarus. There's an Icarus street as well. Icarus, the young man whose father, Daedalus, fashioned wings to escape from the labyrinth and warned his son not to fly too near the sun because the sun would melt the wax. But Icarus, in the joy of flight, forgot the warning and his wings melted and he plunged into the sea near the island of Samos, and so on. You know, it's everywhere present, this sense of a past.
Now, the most famous story of the labyrinth is about Theseus, the hero who killed the dreaded Minotaur, the half-bull, half-man. And then Theseus, of course, found his way back out of the labyrinth by a thread that he'd been given by Ariadne. And I guess the story raises various questions. For one, this figure of the Minotaur, the half-man, half-bull, do we know anything about where he comes from?
There was a bull worship in ancient Crete, although not a lot is known of that either. There's a wonderful piece of sculpture, really, in the National Museum in Heraklion of a bull leaper, who could have easily been Theseus, who somersaulted over the bull and landed on his feet at the other side of it. Whether he was a gladiator or a sacrificial victim or a professional athlete of some kind or a priest, we don't really know, but the imagery of the bull and, you know, bull allusions are everywhere, and so there was a cult of some kind. And maybe the story of the Minotaur is somehow associated with that.
What about the labyrinth? First of all, do we know if there really was a labyrinth on Crete?
There's a great deal of talk about the labyrinth, and Cretan sensibility seems to be tied up with the labyrinth. I mean, the original palace of Knossos was huge and had hundreds and hundreds of rooms, and they had a habit of building. They tacked on rooms one against the other. So in the end, the palace itself was like an extraordinary complex city with rooms leading into rooms, a labyrinth in itself. And so it may be something to do with the architectural style.
And Knossos is the great archaeological site that still exists on Crete, really the cradle of Minoan civilization, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. Knossos was the great city. And it's a marvelous place, really, to visit even now, I mean, even in the ruin. If you can get to it at a time when there aren't too many people around, it's better, because if you get there early morning or sort of sometime when it's a little bit, you know, there's some degree of solitude, it has a tremendous impact.
We've been talking about the story of ancient Crete, but the history has gone on to the present. And one thing that Crete is famous for is how its people have tried to resist various occupiers. There were the Venetians several centuries ago, then the Turks, and more recently the Germans. This is really a country that is built on resistance, a culture.
Yes, that's very true. It's a culture that is built on resistance. It's a resistance that has formed the Cretan character, I think.
And there are stories about horrendous things that happened. For instance, going back to when the Venetians occupied Crete in 1527, wasn't there a horrible massacre?
Oh, the wedding massacre. George Candanaleon, yes. There's a full of mystery, really, that story. He was a local rebel chieftain. At one time, he controlled most of western Crete and became really quite powerful. For reasons that have never been properly ascertained, he went to the house of a Venetian noble called Molino, Francesco Molino, and offered to make some sort of a pact between his people and the Venetians through a wedding between his son Petros and the Molino daughter. And Molino agreed, and the Cretans were invited to a wedding feast. And they came, several hundred of them came, and Molino treated them royally. I think there was 100 oxen or something, and barrels of wine. And then at a certain point, the Cretan contingent became drunk. And at that moment, Molino gave orders for the shots to be fired, which is a signal for a detachment of the Venetian cavalry to come in. And they were all taken and bound and kept there for the night. And then in the dawn, this extremely vindictive Molino personally hanged Candanaleon and Petros, the son. He hanged them with his own hands. And most of the rest of those people were sent off to be galley slaves.
And you write about how there's a kind of folk hero in Crete, and that's the freedom fighter, the guerrilla fighter who resists the occupying forces.
Yes, the palikari, which is still a word used among Greeks for someone very dashing, someone who cuts a fine figure, someone who disregards, you know, sort of petty restrictions and makes his own path, and usually tied up with an ability to use a knife and a musket rather well. And he was the model for this indomitable spirit of revolt, especially in the mountainous parts of central Crete.
Barry Unsworth, the author of the book Crete. He talked with Steve Paulson.